Hey friends, have you noticed that no matter how much yoga we do, we still may struggle in our intimate relationships? Yoga can and does help, but at a certain point, you need more relational practices and support from trusted allies. My husband and I have a wonderful marriage, but we're not necessarily the best relationship teachers. In episode 315, I brought on the founders of the Relationship School, Jason and Ellen. They live and breathe all things relational. Boundaries, conflict, owning your needs, attachment styles, and so much more. If you want to learn how to work through conflict better and communicate better, Jason is offering 50% off his Indestructible Partnerships course. Thousands of people have changed their relationships for the better with this course. Go to relationshipschool.com/Lara and use the coupon code Lara to get 50% off this life-changing course. Now, back to the podcast. Good movement and welcome to Redefining Yoga, a lit yoga podcast, which is designed to investigate all aspects of the modern evolution of yoga from my background as a physical therapist and lover of movement. My mission is to help everyone find freedom through smarter and safer movement patterns, so together we can be uplifted, benefiting all beings. Welcome to Monday Motivation. Today's motivation is with Mark Hyman, Motivation with Mark. And it's really about our marriage and it's about any advice we have. We now celebrated 20 years of marriage. So we have a little bit of foundation to base some of our advice on. But I did ask my Instagram followers to send us questions and we got really good ones. So we'll start with that. But first of all, welcome, honey.
Thank you, honey. Good to be here.
Good to be here. So first question, somebody with a very long tag, TK42, why aren't you something, says, based on previous posts, it seems you got married in your 30s. Do you think the longevity of your happy relationship is because you got married at a more mature age than in your 20s, or were you guys just compatible?
Since we didn't know, well, I knew you late. We knew each other late in our 20s.
Yeah.
I always say that I'm glad we went to college together, but didn't meet until years later. And I always say that I am happy about that because I definitely would have blown it if I met
early
you.
On.
Yeah. And I was always great.
Yeah. I think this is a really good point, though. I think that there are people who successfully get married in their 20s. So I, you know, hats off to them. But I think a lot of people, the 20s is a time of individual formation, question, angst, you know, all of it. Like, what am I supposed to be doing? I'm now officially an adult, but it isn't looking like how I pictured. I don't feel as mature. And in that, I certainly don't feel like I can cohabitate and have a union with someone. I think that's a pretty common thought. Not, again, people that get married in their 20s, there's plenty of them that are successful. But I do think meeting somebody a little bit after that, I used to say like nobody should get married until they're 30. But that's probably not very fair because there are people, again, who do it. I think it's individual. For me, I needed to really be on my own, quote unquote, for a little bit of time before I could better come to the table as a partner.
Yeah, I think timing it's all about timing. So for us, I know for me, this was the right time for me to be able to be meeting you. But it's just, that's the magic. That's what makes it to find the right person at the right time when it's the right time for the other person. All those elements.
Yeah,
are
I think
really
all of that. So there can be people who think they want to get married, but it is clear their partner is not ready. And that isn't to say they might not change their mind, but I think timing is really undervalued, how important it is. Because you can have great feelings for somebody, you can really feel love and feel companionship, but you're still working on you and whatever elements in your life, or that person is not ready to kind of settle is the wrong word, but you know, it's joining.
You always say you settled, don't you?
Yeah. hardly.
No, but I do think like I had to have the time to find me before we could find us.
Mm-hmm,
my God,
exactly.
That could be a quote. That's the people who make the quotes for the
people,
podcast.
There's
people.
The quote.
That's an awesome one. I had to find me before we could find we.
Oh, that's Good job. Yeah, High five,
honey. But it is. And like, I just was not at the place earlier. Again, as an actor, it's definitely a little more into what was going on with me. And then at a certain point, it was just, I was ready to be open and to make those changes.
I would say another element is that we both had come out of relationships that were kind of exhausting, that were emotionally taxing. They were pretty high, just high demanding people. And I think we weren't looking for a relationship is the point. So we'd come from those relationships and we're kind of pausing, and then we found each other and it was so easy in a way. Like, it was like, wow, this is how a relationship can be and should be. And that isn't to say it is always going to be easy, because it's not, because situations happen, conflicts happen, life happens. But if you have that, like if somebody is having a lot of conflict early on in a relationship, I'm not sure that's the person for you. I'm not a therapist, but one thing I have said to other people is there should be an ease to it. It shouldn't feel like so much work. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to put work into the relationship, but the coupling doesn't feel like work. All right. Next question. Next is not a question. Angie Palms just says, keep on as you are. Partnerships are all about caring, sharing, and fun. And you have that, which we do. Ariel asks, how do you keep your relationship fresh and spicy?
Well, we did have that spark one, right?
We did talk about this a little bit. I think I'll start off here. First of all, we've been together 20 years. And I think when you start in any relationship, there is this like, wow, it's been a year. I can't believe it. And you think 20 years just seems like such a huge amount of time. And I think when you're not with the right person, but you're not with somebody who is keeping you vibrant and not on edge, but like it's spicy, is because it's interesting and there's curiosity and there's novelty. Even though we spend so much time together, I was saying this to you the other day on our 20-year anniversary, like, what's so amazing is I will never figure you out, right? You are your own person. I'm my own person. And I love that there's kind of new layers. There's a lot of layers that I'm so comfortable with and I know so well about you. But there's always, so I think the novelty of just learning about your partner and about their own growth, his or her own growth. And I think that's what keeps it spicy. And then also being intimate, you have to be physical. We try and hug a lot. You're very touchy-feely. I think if two people were not naturally touchy-feely, it might be a little more work, but you're just such a snuggler and such a hands-on person that we just have a good spark.
I also, to add to that, there are times when I'm like, wow, we haven't kissed in a bit, or we haven't hugged. And you could feel that there's some dissonance when that happens. And sometimes you have to sort of, if you're with each other all the time, sometimes that, like, you sort of can take that for granted. And so sometimes I'm actually mentally making, I was like, oh wow, I haven't touched you. I haven't like kind of give you a kiss, because we're sort of just get into our days. But I would say the other part with that, which I think is probably the downfall of a lot of couples, especially early on, is this yearning for that early stage spark and excitement and heart fluttering, which there's something wonderful about that. And I guess if you start losing that, which everyone does lose that, it just changes. It's like, and you sort of have to ride it through to there's other kinds of joys and sparks, but it's not the same as going on that first date, having that first kiss. And there's something wonderful and exciting about that. And if you keep doing that, you never get to the other stages. So
that would be exhausting, quite frankly.
Yeah,
always,
but it
had
is
that.
Sort of exciting.
Oh, it
but
is.
That's what I think one reason when people are not, they're looking for that. Why is this not in my life? As opposed to finding what's right there and the joy of the other parts, just like we do with our kids. We don't, you know, it's not like we give up our kids when we're like, oh, we just really wanted that cute baby. And that other phase, it just comes to different phases, and there's different things you start appreciating about the relationship and about yourself and about your partner.
And I think it's also expanding our idea and definition of passion. Because for me, in so many ways, I'm so much more attracted to you now than I was even then. because that was like...
And you were really attracted to me then. So this right, is crazy.
Right, exactly. Right. So, I mean, a lot of it has to do with there's all the layers I know about you and love about you. And so like before it was just almost like a superficial layer I was getting to know. So my feeling of passion and spice is that I know you so well, even though I'm uncovering new things all the time, but it's not familiar and boring. It's familiar and passionate because it's like my love for you has grown. So my love and lust for you has changed as well. And it's a much deeper passion. So I think that kind of spiciness doesn't have to be like, okay, they walk in the room and you're just like butterflies, but it can be, he's holding my hand and it feels so good. It just feels like all of the things like encapsulated.
Yes.
All right, so Brooke asks, how do you move through stuff you don't see eye to eye on?
Good question, Brooke.
Silence.
No, well, that is, how do you move? I'm processing.
Well, I'm going to let you answer, but I'll first make the statement. In my opinion, I don't think we have too many things we don't see eye to eye on. We might have different approaches. We have different responses to situations. But I think, you know, there's a line in between that, or the spectrum in between that is pretty consistent. We see eye to eye. It's rarely that there's something where you really see it one way and I totally see it on the opposite end. Again, it's often the nuances of how something is approached or dealt with, but you, yeah.
Well, I would say, I mean, one thing recently where I know we didn't see eye to eye on is you think it's okay to cheat at Boggle. And I don't think that's so okay. And you do it on a regular basis.
I knew he's going to bring it in.
You do it on a fairly regular basis.
No, I don't.
I don't think it's okay, at family games, to cheat.
I don't.
No, but...
I don't cheat.
She does.
No, I don't.
She
okay.
really does. She we goes overtime.
We don't see eye to eye on that.
But besides that, I do think that when it's sort of giving space for the other person and knowing the other person's... In general, we're both coming from a place of wanting what's best and doing right, and a place from love. And when occasionally it's not, and sometimes we don't see eye to eye, because one person had a really bad day and was just snappy and was obnoxious, and it does happen usually with Laura.
Never.
But we had those moments, and then it's just sort of being okay with that. But we're not, when you're with someone all the time, you're not always going to be at your best. And you know, if you bring it up at the right time, then we sort of learn from it and we grow and we move on and not be so serious about everything. Things are, you know, in general, things are great. So those little things you learn to sort of either accept or discuss if it needs to be discussed.
Yeah, I mean, I really think for relationships to hold on to their strength and value and security and all the things, you have to let go. You have to, you know, forget the stuff that you, I don't want to say that you don't see eye to eye on, but you have to forget those moments that are tough, because we know there's going to be tough moments. But, and I have struggled with this personally. I think I've gotten a lot better, but I used to really hold on to things much more than Mark. Mark was
great. That's just because you have a better memory than I do. Yeah.
Maybe that's true.
That's part of it. Yeah.
But you know, that in the long game, that's just not going to serve anybody to kind of bring up something that happened 5-10 years ago as part of your strategy. First of all, it shows that there's not a lot of material if you're reaching that far back, but it's just not playing fair. So I think learning how to have arguments, having debates, having bantering, bickering, whatever, but not wanting to hurt the person. You know, I think that's at its level. If you don't see eye to eye, but you don't want to harm, you don't want to hurt somebody just because they don't see it the same way as you do.
Let it go. Yeah, but you have to sort of let it go and be in the present. So
right.
if you're harping back to things, you're not in the present,
and I think we're both, you haven't really
addressed the stuff. Then you've got stuff you got to work out because you haven't addressed it. If you're bringing it up,
yes. I think we're both very optimistic in general. So this is something too, if you're kind of an optimist, but you're pairing yourself with somebody who's more pessimistic, that could work, but it could also not. Because I think the reason having more of an optimistic outlook, we remember the positive things. So when we're going through something that is more like more of a struggle or feels heavy, or it's not like we're like, oh, we got to fuck this, give this up. You know, it's like, oh no, you know, we're going to ride this because mostly everything's good. And I think that comes from an optimistic outlook and a good relationship. Mm-hmm. So I hope we answered your question, Brooke. Next question is from Yoga with Magdalena. It has four parts to it. What's your experience with power dynamics over the time? You come across as a very equal couple. Has it always been like this, or were there any times where one of you felt that they were giving / investing more than the other? How long do you think it is healthy to go on with an imbalance?
Mm. Mm. I think that's a good question.
That's a great question. I mean, I think this is not something you can weigh. Like, you can't be like 150 grams, 155 grams, right? But you can sense, if you sense there's an imbalance, then that might be something, just a little warning sign. Like, if it's a consistent imbalance, like we were having a discussion with a friend of ours who has had some of this in a relationship. And it's like, if you're always the one that's giving, or always the first one to, even if you love doing that, even if that's part of your nature, that doesn't mean the other person shouldn't like show up and give some as well. Because there will probably be the imbalance in that someone might be more of a giver. Mark is more of a demonstrative giver than I am. But I am a giver in different ways too. I think I'm giving in a consistent way. I like kind of just am always present and hold, you know, I don't hold grudges against him and ignore him or something. You know what I mean? Like, so our giving is different. The power dynamics is, I mean, we're so lucky. It's really equal from what we do as a partner, loving-wise, to what we parent as. It's equal. There's times where it's more lopsided and it's usually Mark is doing more. And he will ask, he'll ask for help. He'll say, you know, I'm really doing a lot of the work. Can you help out or something?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is, I think when we have had those kind of dynamics, it's probably, I would imagine, in relationships, in male-female relationships, at least that's what I know more, it's probably usually stereotypically more
like
that
a heteronormative relationship.
Heteronormative, yeah. Typically might have the woman more giving or asking for more. And I think if anything, it's been it's definitely been the opposite where I've had to, and there are times partially because of our different, where our work is in our lives is important to both of us, but where we were from the very beginning, what you wanted out of your work life and what I wanted was very different and what part it was for us. So I think it's the key is for the person, and I'm assuming it's like the person it's usually an issue for is the person who feels like he or she is giving more, not the other person.
Yeah,
because I was like,
right.
Hey, I'm that this feels good. I think the importance is communication, but in a communication and not in a way that's going to become defensive, but in a communication in which I have done in a way of just expressing, you know, that it's from a place of love and caring and wanting to be a good partnership and just being open about how you're feeling about things. And you have, when I have, because you sort of get, sometimes you might get wrapped up in things, you sort of come to the table and are ready and we make
yeah.
shifts. But that's happened, you know, over
right.
the time that's going to happen. It's tended to, and part of it I think is our energy. I just like, I have more hours in my day than you have in your day.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that I might be doing at 5 a.m, so by the time you're up, I've already done them. Well, then you're starting that day at that time.
I have to do my stuff.
You have to do
right.
those when I'm ready to be together. But I think it's all just about speaking, it can't stay that way. If it stays that way, then you know you have to things either change or then you're not in the right relationship because the person's not hearing you that of what your needs are.
I would add to that, I do think it's important to know that if you're not married, if you are married, I'm a big commitment person. Like if you've made the commitment to get married, I really believe you should make the commitment to try and work things through. Mm-hmm. But I also think you have to give yourself a break in realizing like, we can't change anyone.
Mm-hmm.
People are who they are. And yes, I think one reason our marriage is very successful is that we have both grown because we wanted to for each other. And because we came to like, you know, we our best parts brought the other parts out. You know, I'm not saying that well, but it's just, you will show up more because you want to. But at the end of the day, I'm never going to be Mark. I'm not going to be like, he wakes up in a way he's programmed to be thinking of other people. He thinks of himself too. Of course you take care of yourself, but, and I'm not, that sounds really rude. Like, I don't wake up thinking that way, but I'm waking up thinking more globally than that. And so, but I have shifted because I want to. I want, obviously, my family is important. So some things I ask myself when I'm in the trenches of really working, and Mark has in the past said, like, wow, you just, you know, need to pay more attention to us and like home life. I think in 20 years, am I going to regret not doing what I'm doing now work-wise, or am I going to regret not being fully present? It's always that, you know, that you, I would regret being not fully present. So I would say I've been mostly very present, but a lot of that has to do with Mark holding the bar high for me and not guilt tripping either, you know, just, so I think it's a balance of encouraging more from someone, but also realizing they may not ever change. So it's,
and,
like,
and some of it is when that happens in a relationship. If that's early in a relationship,
yeah,
and you're having those power struggles, that's problematic.
I always, yes, I get
right. So it's sort of like, and we were speaking to this mutual friend about this the other day, about, it's like, trust that inner radar of like, if you have the same things and it keeps coming up, you can't keep pushing that down. There's a reason why that's there, and you have to, it's like, maybe that's probably not something that's going to be going away. If it's something that's farther, when it's further along in the relationship, and things, just because of life changes and work changes and family changes, you know, you're going to go through these peaks and valleys where someone's going to be overwhelmed. And then it's just bringing, you know, sharing what your feelings are. But if it's early, that's a problem.
That was what you said. And I thought, yep, that was so great. It's like, if that inner radar is like saying, this is kind of a consistent thing that comes up,
yep,
and you're just dating, like, believe me, it's not going to change when you get married. It'll probably get worse. So speaking of being different in terms of some things, Made with Om asked, do you guys have major sleep differences? How do you manage that? Example, I'm sleepy 2 hours before my hubby. We don't have major sleep differences, except that Mark wakes up 2 hours plus before I do, which only benefits me. So I'm not going to, it doesn't, I think if one of us was staying up till 1 in the morning, and that would be an issue. It would just, that would be weird if you had really,
completely, the ones like
really
early. Like
we tend to go to bed around the same time.
You might stay up a little, I probably fall, if we're either watching something, right, I'll fall asleep because I go to bed.
Because you get up so early.
Right.
He gets up between 4:30 and 5.
You might be up like an hour later, but we're probably at least in bed together.
Mm-hmm. I might read in bed,
you,
and you're falling asleep.
And yeah, I'm falling asleep. We're sort of, you know, 9 to 10, we'll probably be typically in bed, either reading, talking, or other things. but
PG.
Then you tend to stay up, and I'll
right,
because
you,
right,
get up so much earlier.
And then I'm up at, I like to get up, I just naturally wake up sometime between 4 and 5:30, and I'll work out, and then I can just have my private, my time to myself, and get some stuff done. And then I bring, you know, get your coffee in bed, and we have a little chance to talk then. So it isn't really, I mean, that's just who we are.
I think it works actually for us in a lot of ways. I think if you have different hours and it's not working for you, if it's pulling you away from each other, time together, energy, that I could lead to a conflict. But for us, it's been fine. It's been great.
But we also have time during the day where we could have lunch together. So if,
yes,
someone's gone,
we both, okay, so,
right,
we should,
so that's
say
a
that,
different,
right?
If someone's done 9 to 6.
We are together a lot, meaning not together like talking together, but we are around. We both have worked out of the house or for ourselves. Even when I had the studio, I would go and I would be gone maybe 4 or 5 hours,
or
at the
most.
I'd
come in and help a little,
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, and he would come in. So we,
yeah,
pretty much every day of our married existence, we're near each other, you know? And so, and that's lovely. A lot of people couldn't do that. They would, we've had so many friends who are like, there's no way I could have my spouse, we could be around each other all the time. We would drive each other crazy. I don't think you know until you do it. In some ways, it makes it easier because you don't have that very concentrated time at the end or beginning of the day where you're going to kind of fit it all in. And along with that, when you have kids, it becomes like, you know, list of things to do. And the marriage coupling part of it sometimes is pushed to the side. So for us, I think it's worked really well.
I think also, as I'm thinking about it, I think something that I like at night, even if we're not at the same, if one's awake and one's asleep, there's something really, I like having you next to me. If I could just have my hand on your back or something. So that connection, it doesn't have to be a verbal connection. A lot of times at night, it's not. But it's if we're close and we're in the same space as opposed to, yeah, we have opposite schedules and I'm going to bed and you're off and you don't come in till like 11 or 12. That to me, like, I don't like it when that happens. I'd rather
have you. Right, because you're kind of disappeared.
Yeah, like, you're sort of in the same space. There's a connection, even if there's not a verbal connection. There's just a physical connection, which is nice.
So speaking of the work stuff, Rachna asks, how do you ensure your successful passion for lit doesn't affect love and respect? I think what she's saying, how do you ensure your successful passion for lit doesn't affect love and respect?
Like for
maybe between us.
Yeah, I would imagine that's sort of like.
I think it's, well, Mark has been, I'll answer and then you can answer.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's been an issue at all because Mark has been such a cheerleader for my work and evolution since the beginning. And, you know, when the kids were little, I didn't work that much. I taught yoga, maybe 5 hours a week. And then the rest of the time, we were caretaking our kids. Mark was working about,
probably more than...
I was working
15 to... Or he was working like 20, maybe.
He was maybe working...
But I was in the house.
15 to 20 hours a week. And so we had a lot of time together. And then as we got busier with our work and our kids were getting older, you know, we just got more organized about our time. But he's been so, so supportive the entire way. And my passion for my work could only be that way because I see, you know, sometimes he doesn't want to talk about yoga, for sure. But, you know, he's excited because I'm excited. Even if he's not interested per se in yoga, he's excited for my passion.
Right. Yeah, I guess, I always said like, I don't love yoga. I love Laura teaching yoga. So, and I love seeing Laura be successful. So that part is, I take great pride in Laura and her business and how much she's done. And so, and I've been able to help in ways and give. So I've been able to sort of, there's a piece of it. It's not completely separate where I could be a part of it in small pieces when I, or sometimes bigger pieces. And then when it's not, and there definitely have been times when I've come to him like, hun, the priority we need to, it's getting a little bit out of whack. It's like, you do need to prioritize sometimes our walks or something. Sometimes your schedule, like you just got to find a way to fit it in because we need that. Or if something with the kids, and I could point out because you can get really zoned in sometimes. And we all need that. We can get zoned in on something and not see like, be like, hey, hun, we got to make time. Like Jonah has a game. We really need to, and you have to, and we both need that. Sometimes we sort of get so set in what has to get done that we do lose the big picture of like, okay, if I'm looking back, no, that's of course more important, but we don't see it. And so to have each other be able to be those reminders of what we know that we really want. Again, and it's not taking it personally. It's
yes,
understanding where it's coming from. And then just being able to voice it in a way, which we don't always do. And then it doesn't usually work out well if one doesn't present it in the right way, that it can be easily heard. But when it is, you know, then it's coming from a place of love.
Yeah, I think the key is, again, that if you really support your partner in his or her growth, whatever it is, professionally, personally, but also at the same time, keep them in check with making sure that they're involved in the ways they need to be. I think that it's a win-win. You know, it really is. So thank you, honey.
You're welcome.
I always thank you for that. Okay, so Vanessa Paletta asks, share how one or both of you changed in a big way and how you chose to grow together.
Well, the easy one for me is like, I didn't even know what a vegan or vegetarian was before we met, which is pretty crazy, the times. I can't imagine someone, but that was back in the late 90s. And I still should have, but like I had never met a vegetarian or vegan. So, but I wanted to learn about it because I, when we biked across the country and I was sort of just started eating like you. And then it's interesting, we were just listening to this book about the four tendencies. And so like if I understand something and I have like the expectations sort of set externally, internally, I could buy in completely. So I think I actually jumped on board even more than you did at the very beginning. We're going from vegetarian to vegan, and then we both are. But that's probably that awakening of compassion towards other sentient beings and how that's led down the path towards my becoming a humane educator. And like that was 100% different from where I was a day before we had our first date to, you know, when we got married, even.
Right. And your willingness. So yeah. By the way, I was vegetarian. He was not, but I didn't, you know, ask him to be vegetarian. He was curious on his own. And once he started learning about it, continued to learn. And then we became vegan together. And that was almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I would say, I was thinking back because I was like, what is, you know, I'm thinking nothing really changed for me, but I do have one thing just popped in my mind. And it's that, so I grew up Christian. He grew up Jewish. We both had a pretty institutionalized type or organized religion, but organized religion background where I went to Sunday school, was confirmed, did all that.
He was
bar mitzvahed. And so when we met, we both were fine with being, you know, but from two religious backgrounds. And then when we got married, our marriage ceremony was composed of both elements. It was really lovely. We didn't get married by an official of either religion, but a family friend who mixed everything in. And it was really beautiful. And I would say once we had kids, I asked Mark, I was like, do you want to raise them Jewish? He said, no. And so I remember like maybe the second Christmas, I was like, oh, I really want to get a Christmas tree. And you had this reflex, super strong reflex. And you're like, we're never going to have a Christmas tree in our house. And I remember thinking, whoa. Now, my first reaction was, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you can't tell me what, you know, like I immediately was thinking like anger back. Like he's telling—
I don't know that I said it that strongly.
Well, you said it pretty strongly. Like we're never going to have a Christmas tree in my house. So by the way, let me give the end story, which is we have Christmas trees in our house every year now. So the point is that by realizing that it wasn't about the Christmas tree and was about memories that I think you had being like, one of the few Jewish kids in the area and like seeing Christmas trees and that was a very otherness type thing. And you were really not about these kind of markers that, you know, our relationship was such a union of openness. I think it was more of a memory. It wasn't the Christmas tree per se, but my growth came because I got a little sad because I grew up with Christmas trees and I thought, well, maybe I'll never have a Christmas tree. We went to my parents' house for many years, so it didn't really matter. But what it was is that I just let him kind of settle into, it's actually fun having a Christmas tree and it doesn't have a religious meaning. And I think whatever those early feelings you had about the significance or what a Christmas tree symbolized went away. So I think it's just about, sometimes your partner will respond with something strong and you have to look past it and say like, where is this coming from? This is not the issue. The Christmas tree is not the issue.
Yeah. So just, for those keeping score,
yeah.
I completely changed my ethics. That was my big change. And Laura gave me a couple of years without a Christmas tree. That was her big change.
Well,
and
no.
Then let me come around. No, okay. So let me just fill in. So you still didn't give
me. Oh my gosh.
You didn't really change there. But
well, no, I changed the sense
changed
that
me.
I never. No, that I was okay with not having a Christmas tree.
I just need to correct
yes.
a couple
okay.
of things. This is
sure.
going out there.
Okay.
One, the Christmas tree was more. Because my parents were coming around, I was sensitive to my dad being in the Holocaust and the family, and I just
my mom converted to Judaism.
We were never home for Christmas. I was like, hey, I'm all about Christmas. We're going to be going to your mom's anyway. Let's do that there, so we don't have friction in the house. This is not part of my tradition, and if we're going to be spending that there, then I think that we could at least and then. As things got older, it was easier, and that was fine. But that was really more out of respect for my parents, who were very close and were coming by, and their history and stuff.
And we're disappointed that we weren't raising kids
yeah.
Jewish. So,
and then the other part about
that.
The Judaism was more my feeling was not that I definitely wanted them to have Jewish tradition, but I didn't want to be one of those Jews who was raising their kids and wanting them to go to Hebrew school and go through what I did, which was great. That was from where my parents were a lot more religious. And I don't go to synagogue on the weekends. And it just didn't feel right to me to send my kids and ship them off for religion if we were not practicing the religion in the home and having Sabbath every Friday night and going to synagogue. I just didn't feel that was fair to them. Now, when I grew up, my parents were religious and we had a more religious upbringing. I just didn't want that or feel the need for that. So I didn't want them. It wasn't like I was against Judaism as much as I just felt like if I was going to do it, I needed to have ownership of being a part of that. And since I didn't, I just didn't feel I wanted to respect some of the traditions and teach them the traditions and some of the values, but not push this on them in something that I wasn't doing. So,
and by the way, when we did our pre-marriage counseling, we got great scores, which is, I highly recommend that because
it's like a communication test.
They really do. A good marriage counselor who happened to be my minister growing up, who is a wonderful person, did a lot of the communication stuff so that you could recognize like this person is wired differently than you. And this is how we did the Myers-Briggs. Yeah. We did some other, we scored like the highest on some like communication tests. So that really boded well for us.
Yeah.
But the thing he said, he goes, the only concern I have is that you are, you know, you're an interfaith marriage and those are typically can be very challenging. That'll probably be your biggest challenge. And what I will say is I appreciated he said that, but it's actually been the least challenging thing. I mean,
it's because it wasn't such an important part of our values and our ethics were less based on religion than just the overarching,
like
overarching
code of ethics.
Yeah, our code
of,
and what was important.
Which I think
to
is
us.
Universal in all religions.
Yeah, so exactly. And what we've done from elsewhere. But since it wasn't so codified in the religion, I think that.
And Mark has a saying, like you, and the saying is, what is it? No, I'm sorry.
I don't know what
saying. Oh my gosh. And the saying is, not you get what you get. The you mean what you say and you say what you mean, or what is it?
Oh yeah, you say what, yeah.
And so I think that's
what
like,
you say is what you mean.
What you say
that's
is what you
I
mean.
Did. You can hear me as like a little boy. I always used to say, what you say is what you mean. When people would say, it was like, I didn't mean that. I don't what you say.
Right.
And it is like and I your think words. Yeah.
Words matter. Actions matter. And I think that again,
speak
our
of kindness and
yeah, that our religion is our kindness for all beings. So, well, that was an interesting question, Vanessa. Yeah. I guess I didn't answer it as successfully as Mark, but I feel like that was a big one because you might not remember as strongly as I do because you had a very strong reaction.
No, I'm not saying that
and
I didn't have a strong reaction.
His memory is not as good as mine.
I just don't see how that was your, we'll move on, but okay. I don't really see how that was a
that
big
was
change
my,
in you.
I was trying to think big change in me. I don't
yeah,
know.
Okay.
We'll
let you guys can decide.
Yes. So Made with Om did ask, do you have couples in your circle married that long? Todd and I feel it's rare. She and her husband Todd have been married 23 years.
Ah.
We actually have a majority of our friends are still married and have been married 20-ish years.
Well, even ones who haven't, like 15 to maybe the ones who are a couple years after us.
Yeah,
like
we have a
most
few
friends
that are divorced, but you know, most of our friends in our friend circle are married. And I do think that, and all my brothers are married. So I have three brothers. They're all still married. I don't mean still married, but you know what I mean. They're married. And they are all married anywhere between 15 and 23 years. So I do think that, you know, it's interesting because I had never like craved marriage in this. It's like some girls, maybe guys too, just kind of grow up thinking, I can't wait to be married. Like our daughter is like that. You know,
she used to make wedding dresses.
Right. I mean, she's just like she talks about having kids and I just never was that person. And so I do think it's really important whoever you do pair with that you do think of the institution of marriage as very sacred because it is. It's a huge commitment and yet it's a joyful commitment. It's really like you're taking a leap of faith and yet that leap is safe because hopefully you have a real good sense of the person and who they are and how they're going to treat you and how they're going to be 20 years later. You know, it's not like I got any big surprises from Mark. I mean, I saw him, you know, in all its his
and
glory.
I have all these new onion shapes or peels that
peels.
I continue
you
to
do.
Peel.
You do. Yes.
No, but,
yes.
I would say, I was thinking about this the other day that, again, I'm reading this book, it's a lot of, I mean, some about the people you're around and the person and how you value each other, but how is the person, what does the person think about like sticking to things. I think one thing you always knew about me is like, I will stick to something. I will give it, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to push through. I'm going to work through. Now, there's a point at which maybe you don't, you know, there's a point at which, okay, you did everything and it's not, you can't because it takes two. But if you're with someone who's not like that, who's not going to really push through the tough times and work through the tough times and put the effort and the work into it, those kind of traits are, I don't think that changes. I think you're either someone who will, who's going to work through it because it's going to be work. There are going to be times, there are low times. There are going to be times where you really don't like each other. And
that's my change. There's Vanessa's question. It just came, right? Because one of Mark's—
You were ready to not stick with it.
No, but one of Mark's early worries or concerns was that I was a fleer. Because I don't like conflict. It almost makes me want to vomit. I just don't like conflict. It doesn't mean I don't have anger and it doesn't mean I don't show anger.
You just put off.
But I don't like conflict. And that's a good quality, but it's not always a good trait because it can, you know, lead to stuffing things down or holding on to things and then exploding or not looking for a resolution, just looking for an exit. So for me, my biggest change, I think, has been that being married and being very committed and in love with Mark, I really had to have some tough conversations with myself because I could go down this road of, in the past, if I had any issues with a boyfriend, even if we were in a serious relationship, I'd be like, you know what? Forget this. You know, I could easily be deterred if it felt like there was just a lot of conflict and it just was going to exhaust me. And so that was me though. That was me not saying like, hey, guess what? Conflict is going to happen. Like get okay with it, you know, as opposed to avoid it so much that when it does happen, it feels overwhelming and then you want to leave, then you want to get out of there. So I think that has been, wouldn't you agree? That has been a big change. I have been able to communicate much more when something is bothering me. I think I hold on to things less. I don't think there's long periods of time I go and then just explode or something. So yeah, there's my change.
There's your change.
There it came. It's not just the Christmas tree.
Yeah. So I don't know where that we were.
The question was just about the being with somebody. Marriages.
It's more about being with someone who's willing to ride out the highs and lows. And you could sort of figure that out, the type of people who will stick with it and push on, knowing that there's not if it continues and it just stays bad and the two people are not wanting to work on it. But, you know, there's work involved and there's a sense of, you know, being okay that the other person's not always going to be what you want or need, but know that you're going to be able to come back, that there's going to be highs and lows, just as in anything, in any job, in any relationship, and someone who's going to be able to be willing and wanting to stick it out, because knowing that in the end, it's there's a lot of wonderful parts to doing so.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I do think it gets sweeter with time. I think there are times that early in the marriage, middle, there can be really some tough moments. And then when you get through those tough moments, add kids in there and it becomes tougher for sure.
Yeah.
It becomes amazing and joyful, but way tougher because you're dealing with little persons and then your own little person, your own little kid self comes out.
Yeah, how you were raised differently
and you really have to resolve those things. And we've worked on that. That's actually where probably our biggest conflict has come up with parenting.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, before
I think with most people, there's a difference in then how to respect someone else's different ways because you both love this being or these beings so much and yet might have a different approach to the way to handle situations. And it's how to respect that and not you know, stomp on the way someone else is doing something, even if it's different. And you know, it's how to be you become a better team.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. I mean, we were just giving our daughter advice the other day and afterwards, Mark was saying like, you were really kind of emotional with that. And he was actually way better because he was just really seeing both sides and all sides of the issue she was talking about. And I was just more emotional, like mama bear, like,
yeah.
And then, you know, 24 hours later, I'm sitting there pulling leg hair on him, telling him because he's over explaining something and she's getting irritated.
It's just different things, you know, so where we
help each other out. Yep. We help each other out for sure. So let's end this by, let me ask you a question. You can ask me a question. So my question would be easy for anybody out there who's listening. What are three things that people should really look for in a partner that you think, like, these are the three things that really matter? And obviously,
saying that's easy?
No, it's not easy.
You just said, that's easy. I think so.
I say it was easy?
There are lots.
Three things you think that if people are like, what should I look for in a partner? And whether it's they have someone that they started dating, they've been with somebody for a while, or they're looking for somebody in the future. What are three kind of traits you think, or three tips, whatever
three
you want to say?
Tips. Wow, these are so many different.
I know.
There are things like, where I feel like our values are like ultimately where we want to put what we think is even important financially, which is usually
that's a huge issue. Oh my gosh.
Of like where you put our money. And I think some of that, while it seems so superficial, but that's usually one of the biggest trigger in relationships.
And it's a non-issue with us because we totally see the same thing.
See eye to eye, and like just going through of like what we value, where we want to put our energy, where we want to put our money, that makes a big, big difference because it determines what we buy things all the time. What are we buying? What are we going to be doing with our time? So that would be, I think it's one element. So that'll be my first one.
What your
sense of value for finances and what you do. I think that says a lot about a person. And if you are completely divergent on those, I think that's a sign for trouble, because that's going to be, you're going to have issues all the way through it if you can't, you know, if you're not materialist or you don't see the value in fancy clothes and your partner loves clothes and there's always getting new clothes, that's going to be a constant. And you're like, hey, that's, what about our trip that we wanted to do to be, you know, so there's where you put your value on, whatever it is, as long as you're simpatico. To some extent, I think that's one. So that's one for me. You go. I'm not going
to. Oh, we're alternating.
Yeah,
well, then we have to do four, not three.
Why?
Well, then, you're going to have the last one. Okay, so.
It's so alternating.
That's fine. So I would say on that regard, whoever you're with, you want to feel like you could take that person anywhere and be happy/proud that you're with them. And that they, in other words, your family, enjoys being with them, and the circle. I know people who are coupled with others and they just don't always get along with certain parts of their life. But it's like, if you can take your partner anywhere and they can really be a part of the life, and you can, that's where I can't imagine being with someone who did not embrace my family and my friends and were equally embraced by my family and friends. I think that's a huge thing that's also overlooked. You know, it doesn't mean like you're going to like every friend or they're going to, you know, but everyone loves you, Mark. You know, it's like my family loves you. You know, my dad loved you.
I paid them a lot of money.
Thank you for making it. See, he likes makes laugh before I get emotional. But I think, there are people who are really good in a bubble, and then you get them in real life with other elements of their life and the partnership doesn't work out so much. And I think that's a red flag. You want that partner to be able to be in all parts of your life. Maybe, again, you're not a yogi, you know, but it wasn't like you wouldn't come to yoga class or couldn't vibe with the yogis or whatever. You know what I mean? Even if it's not like where you want to spend a lot of your time, I could take you anywhere and it wouldn't be an issue. And I just think those things, that it says a lot more about, you know, it's a lot of adaptability, but it's also caring, and that the person cares about the people you value in your life as well.
And with that, I won't take this as one of mine, but in that same vein is like, if you're, how do the people not only treat the people, your family and friends, but I think it's like, how do they treat just the person who's serving you, who's doing it? Do you see that? I think you learn just as much about someone's values that way. And are you simpatico? I mean, hopefully you're not both really obnoxious to people who are serving you, but that's in any service, whether it's a restaurant or someone who's doing something for you, that's sort of, are you the same in how you want to treat others? So whether they're family or friends or not. Okay. So I would say another trait that I would look for is someone who makes me feel good about me, because we have so many difficulties in life that if you don't have someone who's like pulling you up when you're going to be down, it's
you're going to make me cry.
No, but it's important. We're all going to have downs, and if someone's not there and can see, is like, man, and can just either naturally, or you want the person to be able to lift you up. So that's someone, and someone who cares to do so, who could see that, because they have to be seeing you to be able to do that. So that's what I'd say.
Yeah, you want to feel, you never want to feel lonely in a relationship. You know, people can be with people and be lonely.
Yeah.
And that's part of it, is even if you're struggling or you're sad or having your down days, you don't want to feel alone in that, you know? So thank you, honey.
Yeah.
I love you. So all of you out there.
Oh, dude.
What?
We're supposed to do three.
I said three tips.
I did.
You did two. I did one. That's three.
Oh, I thought we were each doing three.
That's why I said four.
I thought we were doing
three. Oh, three each? Okay. No, that would be a long podcast.
We'll see how people feel.
I
would say let me just tag on what I was going to say. And then this has been long. So I would say in something that's different for us and based on our sense of humor, like to me, I need someone who's going to think I'm funny. And I think you need someone to be fun.
Yes, right? It worked out really well.
It worked out because you like that I make it, like if you made me laugh, that would be great. But to me, it's more important that you find me funny. It's like, so it's the time of a person. Like to me, it's like I'm not as extroverted. So if I'm introverted, I'm not out there as much. So I need like my one audience member at least to be enjoying it.
And you make me laugh every day.
Yeah, so that's what
I would say. So actually, if somebody said what
you need,
yes.
It's what depends on the person, what you need. That's what I need and it's what you need. So.
And I need laughter. Like, thank God you're also hot. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're hotter because you're so funny.
There you go.
So there you go. So, all right. Well, love you. And thank you guys for listening. We did not get to all your questions. You can always write me if you want to have, we can have Mark on again and babble about our marriage and give you any like non-professional advice. But we're trying hard. And that's the thing is we're trying hard and we're trying together. And I think that's what really elevates any relationship. Thank you. As always, I'm pulling for you.